First of all, I'd like to thank John Pat for putting this session together and you laboratory interested folks to coming. I don't know if you all have heard about the so-called mutant, better known as the new variant CT strain, but last year there was a variant that was reported from Sweden. This variant, or mutant, has a almost 400 base pair deletion in the cryptic plasmid, which is a pretty big plasmid, about 7,000 base pairs. And the deletion has been mapped and located. And so far, all of the mutants have been a single clone in CRLR-E. That's not a problem for the chlamydia, but it's a problem for us laboratorians. Some of the diagnostic tests are affected because many of the diagnostic tests use the cryptic plasmid as the target for their test. Why do they do that? There are about 10 copies per organism, so if you target the cryptic plasmid, you right away get an increase in sensitivity somewhere around 10%. Instead of looking for one major outer membrane gene, you're looking for 10 copies, and so you have a better chance of getting a positive test. The Roche Cobas Amplicor and the TACMAN 48, the Abbott M2000, which is available in Europe but not yet available in the U.S., and the Becton Dickinson all target this plasmid. This plasmid was first reported by RIPA, there at the bottom of the screen, in the European surveillance, which is available on the web, and then published in 2007 in the STD journal, if you want to get more details. Other of our diagnostic tests target different genes or different targets. The GenProbe Aptima, the 16S gene, there's an ARTIST test in Europe that targets the major outer membrane gene and it's not available in the U.S. And then there's a new test, a new rapid test that's being marketed just in Europe, put out by the University of Cambridge, and it targets LPS. And many of our EIA tests, which I hope are not being used very much anymore in the United States, target LPS. So whether or not the diagnostic test picks up this chlamydia as a positive or misses it because it's a negative, it depends on the kind of NET test and whether, you know, culture. Culture, of course, will not be affected. But what happens is the location of the primers, if they sit down where there's no target, the deletion, it's gone, then this will be affected. And the ones that are affected are the Roche PCR and the Abbott M2000, which, as I said, not in the U.S. The other tests, some of which target the plasmid and some of which don't, will be positive. So the ones that where the primers sit down, if they have, if they're trying to sit down on that deletion, it's gone, they'll call a test negative. But the Becton Dickinson test was lucky, and where their primers sit down is not where the deletion is, so that one still works. And the GenProbe test, of course, doesn't even target the 16S gene, or the plasma gene, and the ARTIST test doesn't target the plasma gene, so they'll call a test positive, even if it's a mutant or a deletion organism. And as I mentioned, you can always do culture, and a lot of the non-culture tests will not be affected. So although this variant's only been found in Europe so far, we need to be vigilant. There have been reports on neurosurveillance. None have been found in Ireland, Amsterdam. There have been two recent publications by Kathy Eisen's group in the UK and Silas in the UK, reports of looking at over 1,000 samples in Kathy Eisen's paper, and they didn't find any mutants. And then Dr. Silas actually took 29 strains and sequenced them and found none. She sequenced the cryptic plasmid and found none. So, but in Sweden, depending on which area of the country, overall about 10% of the CT infections are the mutants, and can be up to as high as 64% in some areas. There's one study in Sodra Augsburg County. They looked at 789 samples, and 8% were positive with the mutant, for the mutant. And then they looked at an additional 24 with an in-house PCR. So overall, 25% of their strains in this study were the new variants. So this is the figure that caught everyone's attention, I think, on Eurosurveillance. And you can see they follow their epidemiology year by year by year by year. All of a sudden they got to 2005 and starting in 2006, and they noticed that they had a drop in positivity. This was the first thing that alerted them that something's going on. And if they had looked when they went back and looked at how many of them were the mutant strain that were missed by the tests they were using at the time, they would have seen, you can see on the blue dotted line, what their real prevalence was. So why did we discover this variant? Very astute laboratorians in Sweden realized that they had this big drop in their prevalence, and it was able to be figured out and discerned as something unusual going on because the lab was able to perform multiple diagnostic assays. Had they just been performing the one test they were using, which was missing the mutant, they might have jumped to the conclusion, oh, look what we've done for chlamydia control this year. We have a lot less cases. So why should we be concerned? I don't think we should be alarmed, but I think we should be concerned. If we're using some of these assays that miss the mutant, we could have some false negatives. There may be the possibility, if this thing goes worldwide, of a positive selection advantage because it's not being picked up, not being treated, and therefore is being transmitted to partners. So other things to think about is we really have never known what the function of the cryptic plasmid is. There are one or two reports in the literature, one recent one in London, of a strain, it was a type I, but there are some older strains in people's freezers that have kicked out the plasmid. So we really don't know what the function of the plasmid is, but it's there, and we've exploited it for diagnostic tests. The fact that this organism, in all organisms that cause STDs and non-STDs, can mutate, particularly point to the mutations in gonorrhea, which have led to ciprofloxacin resistance. So far, we haven't seen this resistance in chlamydia, but who's to say what's going to happen next year? So mutations can cause loss of enzymes, loss of genetic elements, and we need to be thinking about this. So we think that some surveillance will be necessary. Europe has been conducting and reporting every month in Eurosurveillance. But we all know that Swedish people love to travel. And the two cases that they found in Norway, one had been to Sweden. So we need to think about the old airplane and be vigilant in the United States. What can we do? We can look at some strains inside and outside of Europe and in the U.S. We possibly would like to have a molecular test that would allow us to identify the mutant and not just say, oh, it's negative in the one test and positive in the other test, it must be a mutant. So one has been published, and I'll tell you about another one. So we in my laboratory have developed a real-time PCR. The one that I'm showing here is the one published by RIPA in that STD journal last year. So they use FRET probes, and it's on the light cycle instrument, if you all have this instrument. The probes are and primers are published. And what happens is when the mutant is missing, the deletion is missing, and you're looking at a mutant, is these two probes sit down close enough to each other because there's this big space in the middle that's missing. And so then they can bring the two probes together, and you will get fluorescence if you have the mutant. The wild type, because they're far apart, because the genetic elements are in there, then don't fluoresce. So we've developed another PCR in our lab. which is for the using TACMAN probes and is run in the ABI PRISM instrument. We modified the primers published by RIPA. They're standard, well-recognized primers throughout the world, with a product of 539 base pairs if there's no deletion, but it's 160 base pairs when there is a deletion. So we designed a TACMAN probe, half of the sequence that were on one side of the deletion, and the other half of the sequences were on the other side of the deletion. So when the deletion is there, that probe can sit down on that space. And we use FAM as the fluorophore and a minor groove binding non-fluorescent quencher. So there is the probe sequence. If you're interested, I'm happy to share that with you. So, as I mentioned, this only gives fluorescence. So, but first you have to know it's a chlamydia. So our algorithm is to first do one of the tests that detect the mutant, and we know it's a chlamydia, and then to just screen on this PCR. We had an idea also that we could look at the melt curve profile. And so we took the wild type and the mutant type, and we've run it on the Idaho Technology HR1, or the high resolution one. And what this does is take the amplicon, no probe, just the amplicon, and you see at what temperature the amplicon falls apart. So we did this, and the confirmatory melt profile for the new variant is about 73 degrees, and the wild type is 82. And this is a schematic showing as the temperature is ramped up with the product in the tube that the new variant melt profile is here, and the wild type is here. So it's a somewhat of a confirmatory test because no one ever likes to place a lot of results on a negative result. It's like, oh, we didn't get any fluorescence. It must not be the mutant. But at least here we can check kind of in a confirmatory test to say, yeah, we got amplification of the product, and it is or it isn't the mutant. So, so far we've tested about 75 strains in the U.S., and I think we tested 60 more on Friday. And I'd like to thank John Papp and Rick Steves and Bobby Vanderpool for getting us some strains from other sites. We have IRB approval to just screen a few samples from across the United States. And Rick Steves was very instrumental in setting this up so that we could get strains representing Kansas and California and Florida and everywhere. And so we've gotten a freezer, probably 100 samples now, representing areas in the United States. And so we'll continue to do surveillance looking for the mutant. And I don't know that it's necessary to do it every month, but like we just need to keep our eyes open. So you can do this yourself if you want. We probably need a committee of some sort to think about organized surveillance, which so far is just pretty unorganized. But what we don't know is where else this new variant is and why it came up and how stable is it. Is it going to die out? We don't think antibiotic susceptibility is affected, but it brings to mind the fact that are we going to, in the future, bring need to have confirmatory tests or maybe even two sets of primers in a test to be able to comfortably say we've done two different targets, and we can say with a surety that we've picked up a chlamydia if it's there. And in fact, one of the manufacturers whose NAT test misses it has done this. They've thrown in another pair of primers so that they can make sure that one of the two sets of primers will pick it up as a chlamydia if it is at the mutant. So who's at risk? Travelers, maybe, if you go to Sweden. We don't know if the new variant causes the same sequelae. I think manufacturers are starting to respond to the diagnostic challenge. Many have already responded and are interested in supporting surveillance. So, in summary, we have a new bug. We don't know where it is or whether there's an advantage. We know that it affects some of our diagnostic tests. It appears to be prudent to do some surveillance, and who will do it and how it will be done remains to be the same. And I'd like to thank the collaborators in the lab, Andrew Hardick, who has been running the test, Padmini Ramachandran, who did the melt curve analysis, and John Papp for setting up this symposium today, and I hope everyone enjoys the rest of the meeting. Quick, two questions, is that what I can do? Oh, okay. Oh, gosh. Anybody have any questions? Oh, okay. There's one. So far, all the mutants, and I haven't identified any, but the ones that have been identified in Sweden, they've all been cerebar type E. Oh, in the U.S. We don't serotype anymore. There are certain strains that are common, more common than others, and E is a very common serotype in the U.S. Different studies, different regions of the country have different prevalences of serotypes. The last study we did was probably in the early 90s in Baltimore, at least, and there our most common cerebar types were D, E, and K, I think. But you see periodically publications of different areas of the country and different parts of the world and prevalences of different serotypes. No, our IRB, we put it in to do it quickly, to get it through fast, and right now it's just blinded samples. All we're allowed to know is it's a chlamydia. So, no, we're not taking, maybe in the future, but right now we're not taking anything but the bug.